note that there are only four members here. I hope the others are coming.
Thank you, Chair. An apology from that is the Kulu, that is Zulu only, and apology for the teachers of the
subject. Thank you. Mr. Onhodi, thank you very much. Yes,
Chair, yeah, and Honorable Sandrin is on his way.
Thank you very much. The government people who would remember. There was a statement some time ago, fewer but better. Remember that statement? Remember who said it? We went to whom said it, if I wanted it, special alone. Pass the day for the university, Mr. Padanera, who was this, that is, I am Mr. Kubum said it. That's right. And we have an agenda. I don't know what has been situated here today. We have an agenda. There are two items on the agenda. Item one is the consideration of the amendment to the scheme. And there's a second opinion from the senior counsel of the department. The consideration of the department's response to the senior counsel on the appeal. And then adoption of minutes. So we're getting an opinion on the opinion. And I'm telling you what we wish. Okay, can we start? I'm told that the department will lead us, or the state law department will lead us in consideration of the amendment. The copy has been circulated to Mama Pa. Yeah, they were circulated. This response of the department to on the opinion is not the one that we received. You have a second opinion on the opinion. Why are we getting this one? Yes,
the reason, this is the paper, the notes that Sandy was reading from, but it, they were not fleshy then. Then he beefed them to become the student.
Or something that was already considered.
Yes,
but we didn't, it was the copy in your computer was not circulated. Yes. You remember? And that's why we're getting, not necessarily because it's part of the agenda. I read the agenda, included it, that was listed there. But we have two items on the agenda. The consideration of the amendment and the minutes. Can we get some book readers from the department or from the state law advisor?
Thank you and good morning to you and the honourable members and other people present. Chair, I'm assisting
you. Aren't we going to be looking at the amendments that you are going to be presenting here together with the amended bill? Aren't we going to do that? Because we have to cross-reference all the time. Okay, which version is that going? This one here. You were saying?
Yes, dear. Thank you very much. Dear, I'm assisted here by Deputy Office, Advocate Aisha Jaw. And I'm not certain how you want us to deal with the matter. You recall, Chairperson, that we did have a meeting with you and with the Minister, and we did prepare a response, and we followed the process that had been agreed upon. We looked at the opinion from Advocate Jamie, and we tried to incorporate some of his concerns which he raised in the amendment bill, and we have come up with some proposed amendments. The amendments are product of a collaborative approach between or engagement rather between ourselves and the department chairperson. And so we work together on this, and the department and ourselves are in full agreement with the amendments which we are about to propose. Do you want me to go through the response back to the changes of the again, or should I just deal with the amendments and if they wish? Just the amendments. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we assume that the proposed amendments have been distributed to all the members? Thanks. Then, Chairperson, I'll begin on page 2 of the document. On page 5, in line 11, we omit word 4, and we substitute that with the word 2. It's a small technical amendment.
The proposal is good, so when you say line 11, what are you talking about?
Thank you. The reference to page numbers and line numbers is a reference to the bill that was introduced. The bill that you have just illustrated was the bill that will, if these amendments are adopted, be the final product of this committee. So two documents that members are meant to be working with today is the Portfolio Committee Amendment to Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Bill. It is B14A, and it will be used in conjunction with the introduced bill, B14. The original one that was introduced, yes.
The unamended one, together with the amended one, and the proposed amendment. So you have three amendments in front of you.
Chairperson, I have a B14A and a B14B document. Which one are we working with?
Yeah, that's correct. The Honourable Member should have a document called C-40, which is the bill as introduced in the committee and parliament. Then you'll also have a document called B14A, which are the proposed amendments. And you'll have a third document called B14B, which is the original law, together with the proposed amendments which we'll run through right now. Do you have them? Thank you. Then, Chairperson, can we continue?
We are amending B,
but we have a bill which incorporates or the amendment as well. But this document, which I'm working from, simply indicates to the members and the committee what the changes are.
It says amendment of clause 2.2.
That's quite good.
On the front page.
No. No. Sure, okay. There's an advocate job. That's quite good.
Now, okay. This is B-48. B-48. Oh, my God, where did I go? Very slow.
Thank you, Chief. May we continue?
Yes.
Thank you. We then tend to close one, paragraph one. On page six of the bill, of the line seven, we've inserted a definition after the definition of deed registries act, of the definition of development rights. And we say, development rights means any approval granted to a land development application. So that's been included in the definition section. Also under clause 1, on page 6, in line 36, we omit or delete the definition of the word purpose. On page 6, from line 50, we omit the definition.
There has to be a particular reason why you're doing this. You're not telling us why. For instance, the council said there is another act that has already dealt with this matter. We don't even know whether you are saying I'm omitting because it's already defined in another act. So just explain to us why omitting, why you're defining fairer. Remember, we have to defend this work.
You absolutely correct. But that was why I had asked initially whether we should run through the response which we prepared, because that then contextualizes the amendments which we proposed. And I understood you, Chairperson, to say that once we've done this and we've gone through the bill with the amendments, that question should then be asked.
Mm.
Then you contextualize the whole bill and all the
amendments. I was assuming that was what you were going to do anyway.
Sure.
Now, and go through.
Sure.
You were saying that, look, let's have three amendments in front of us.
Sure.
So every time you say, this is what I'm correcting.
Sure.
Then you say to us, the action bill, this is how it looks like. In the amended version, this is how it looks like. But if you read, because you're reading from now, it's a guide for us to say, let's follow you.
Chairperson, then just to explain, the deletion of the word earth, amongst other things, it's already defined in the Land Survey Act of 1997.
Are we all there where we are supposed to be? I was going to go because I was going to go. The dietary judgment is supposed to be some go from here. Yes. In a couple of reader, who lay about 14B, 14A, who found a way or lay it, line now, the Kalba, he line a KEP judgment layer, Tetangai, like Amendai. The letter I am, the message is amend, Angachba, who amend a KEP judgment. These are Kanga and I invite you amend. Funa Lord, no. JJ, are you following? Thank you very much. Pago Raidu. That's right.
I understand what you're doing, but I've got 14A here where we're talking about clause 1, number 2 on page 6, 936, the method definition of an earth. Is that what we're doing?
That's right. But what I'm saying, Pago Raidu, is to say in which document are these things supposed to be omitted from? He says, let's look at the original bill. And then we must then have next to that the amended version. So that we now know how it looks like after it has been amended.
Okay. So then 14B is the amended one.
That's right. So that is the one we're supposed to have next to us as he reads through. Hello.
The 14A is really a result of it is really a result of all of the amendments that were proposed by the portfolio committee as we went to clause by clause, of which Perth is an example of something that came from this committee. And then after having considered the senior counsel's legal opinion, we had added to those amendments of yours a lot of amendments that cumulatively would remove the challenge which being unconstitutional. Each and every amendment may not in itself respond to a specific thing that the senior council had raised. You would recall that the senior council had raised it will be, it is unconstitutional, it goes beyond being framework legislation. So what we had done was considered every clause and considered how the clauses would work together to remove that allegation of unconstitutionality. So if the clause would be amended subsequent to the proposal that you have made as a portfolio committee, it would give you the cumulative effect that it is not unconstitutional.
Ma'am is dealing with the end result. Huh? You are dealing with the end result.
Yeah.
I'm still at the first step.
But
how do we get to that end result?
Okay.
So why I'm happy with the way the Honourable Senior Counsel is doing, it says in this document, that is 14A, line 5, page this, or line 11, page 5, of which document, so that the members follow him as he goes. And when he says we are going to omit 4 and substitute it with 2, he must explain why he's omitting 4 and substitute it, because then we get to your end result. The end result of that action is going to be looking like it. That's what I'm looking for.
Just if I could reinforce that point, because this committee had some concerns about the legislation. We then sought senior counsel's opinion. They came and presented an opinion. The sponsor of the legislation seemed to differ with that opinion in places. Sought advice from the state law advisors, and they had to give us a response to that opinion for all intents and purposes. And then whatever the amendments that they're proposing, we will have to consider, and we'll have to hear explanation of every one of those points, what the motivation was, why they've changed it, so that at the end of this process, we as a committee can then look at this proposal and juxtapose it against the opinion of Council Jamie. That's what we need to do. This can't be a conclusive process.
From the Kanfar. You see, both of you now and the lady are getting to the end of that. I'm still saying let's go step by step to the end of that. Because then, like you're saying, ma'am, the cumulative effect. But let's accumulate first and then look at the effect of accumulating. Right? Let's go on now, please. 1 o'clock is just around the corner.
Sure. Thank you. Entry 1 by 6 from line 50. determines the definition of inclusionary housing. On page 10, in line 5, we omit the word chapter 2 and substitute that with the word chapter 5. On page 8, from line 1, we omit the definition of the word reason. In clause 2, honourable members, bear in mind that some of the proposed changes which I am reading are changes which this committee had wanted, and the committee has its own reason for wanting some of those changes. The changes that we propose as a result of our doing an analysis of Ishmael Jamie's opinion, we can explain those, but there are some changes which this committee wants, and they are included in this document. And that's right, Chairperson.
So I'm happy that we are not just organizing.
Sure.
We are contributing.
Absolutely. 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 Thank you. So Chairperson, in respect of the changes to Clause 1, those changes are the changes which the committee wanted of the deliberation of the bill at the time. We then turn to clause 2, and on page 8 of the line 24, we had proposed an addition of a subclause, and the subclause was to read as follows: except as provided for in this Act, no legislation not repealed by this Act may prescribe an alternative or parallel mechanism, institutional system on spatial planning, land use management, and land development in a manner inconsistent with the provisions of this Act. Now, Chairperson, that clause was inserted to ensure that an overbroad interpretation could not be applied to clause 2 of the bill. In other words, we restricted it. And that addresses, in our view, one of the concerns raised by Advocate James. Thank you. May I continue? Thank you. Then, Chairperson, honourable members, we now turn to clause 7. And on page 10, after the word, after line 12, we have added the following sub-clause. We say, for a municipal planning tribunal, considering an application before it, may not be impeded or restricted in the exercise of its discretion solely on the ground that the value of the land or property is affected by the outcome of the application. In other words, the planning, the municipal planning tribunal may consider the application even if the consideration and the outcome of that application will affect the value of the land. It may cause the value to go up, it could cause the value to go down, presumably. And so we've substituted that. We omitted paragraph Roman 6, and we substituted it with the new paragraph, which I've just read, sub-paragraph. Then, Chairperson, honourable members, we turn to clause 8. And clause 8 relates to norms and standards. And on page 10 of the line 58, we omit a clause 1. And we substitute it with the following. 8.1, the minister must, comma, after consultation with organs affecting the provincial and local civil government, prescribe norms and standards for land use management and land development that are consistent with this Act, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, Act No. 3 of 2000, and the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. You'll notice, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, that we've made certain changes so that organs of state in the provincial and local government spheres are also consulted, as it should be. We then turn to clause 10, and in clause 10, after on page 12 of the line 27, we add the following subclause, and that is subclause 6, and we say provincial legislation having the effect of regulating land use, commerce, land use management, and land development within a province must promote development of local government capacity to enable municipalities to perform their municipal planning functions. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know how you want to deal with this, Chair. Can we ask questions after each session? Or? Otherwise, we might get a bit, after each course, we might get a bit lost. I mean,
our feelings are right, but we as well, because our understanding is depressing, it may put them off. But he still does the omission of why. He just says that he's addressing the concern, but he does not say why this way or the other way. But remember that we have many choices. Could be shaped this direction or that direction. So if we choose this route, there has to be an explanation why we choose that route. And this is what is missing in his explanation. Continue,
Chair, that would be very helpful because council is now saying to us we're changing this and reading the change. Mm-hmm. There's an explanation why the change has been there. So, for example, this clause that's being proposed to be put in here is probably a good clause where it says that provincial government must do whatever to promote the development or enable local government to have capacity. Now, that's a lot easier said than done. And if they don't have the capacity must vest with somebody who does have the capacity. Because there are clearly some municipalities that don't have any planning capacity. Ideally, you want to capacitate every local authority to be able to plan at a local level. But if they can't do it, then the authority must vest at the provincial level or somewhere. But we need to just have a discussion on every one of these amendments so that when we consider it in its entirety and read the proposed amendments to the bill, that we can read it from A to Z, having an idea, a conceptual idea, rather than just have the changes read to us.
The same will go back to clause 8, where you say the minister must, after consultation with the organs of state in the provincial and local spheres. I think you remember, Mr. Okondrozi, that the public itself has been omitted. It's a consultation between the minister
and the other organs of state with not with the public. I think originally there was an intention to inform through the government gazette the public about these regulations. They have now been completely omitted. I suppose you have located that requirement elsewhere. You did not just change this clause and ignoring that part. Is that the case, Chief?
That is correct, Chairperson. Chairperson, in clause 8, you will notice that the original clause 8.1 reads as follows. It says the minister must, after public consultation, prescribe norms and standards for land use management and land development so consistent with this Act, the promotion of the Administrative Justice Act 2000 and the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. That's the original clause. That's quite correct.
Now, we read that you need a public address
sure.
To invite comments on that.
Absolutely. It is for the following reason. Bear in mind, we make reference to intergovernmental relations, and the spheres of government have to cooperate with each other to meet national objectives and interests and good of the country, and so we substituted that clause with the following. We say the minister must, after consultation with all the state, in the provincial and local spheres of government, prescribe norms and standards for land use management and land development that are consistent with this Act, the promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, Act 3 of 2000, and the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. And the reason we do that, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is because the ministers can't make these norms and standards or describe them without consulting the spheres of government which are going to be directly affected by the norms and standards. In other words, the prescription of these norms and standards must be informed by what the other two spheres of government have to say. And then of course, the minister will regulate as to how the public will participate. Normally what happens, the minister will publish the draft norms and standards for comment, obtain the public comment, and incorporate those to the extent he or his advice is necessary in the norms and standards which will then be prescribed.
Chairperson, the original bill and the B bill in subsection 3 of that same clause provides expressly for public consultation. So in sub-clause 1, we've removed the focus from public and instead emphasized intergovernmental relations, but in subsection 3, or in sub-clause 3, public consultation remains.
It does mean that we really tend to dump all over the show, and I'd hope to deal with it systematically, but you do raise an important point, Chairperson. So if you look at Regulation 54 in the original bill, you will notice that in 54.1, the minister may, after public consultation, make regulations consistent with this Act prescribing A, B, C, D up to L. Then we add after line 41, and we're still going to get to that, but perhaps it would be useful for me to just deal with that within. We say in the proposed amendment on page 28 after line 41, we insert the following subclause 2. Before promulgating regulations as contemplated in subsection 1, and any proposed amendments to regulations, the minister must A, give notice of the proposed regulations in the media, semicolon, B, invite the public to submit written representations in respect of the proposed regulations to the minister within 60 days after the publication of the notice referred to in paragraph A, semicolon, consider all the representations received in respect of the proposed regulations, and D, table the regulations in Parliament. So that explains, Chairperson and Honourable Members, how the public participation needs to work and how the minister must deal with the comments from the public. Okay, thank you.
Sure. Yes, that's excellent. So, your concern is in clause, sub-clause 3. But I've got a concern really that sub-clause 3, because it says, the sub-clause 3 reads as follows. The minister may, my concern is that may. No concern happened, it has discovered in sub-clause 3. Of how it's public participation. But I've got a concern as well because of that may. Because if I understand clearly what you have said, the committee was concerned about the involvement of the public. But now, if this now bill says the minister may, it now gives him a discretion whether to include the public participation or not. It gives me a discussion now, that may. Gives me a discussion.
Chairperson, Honorable Minister, I suppose you could read it in that way and interpret it like that. But in our view, that would not be with respect to the correct interpretation. What Subclause 3 does, it gives the Minister the discretion to prescribe norms and standards to guide the related sectoral development or land use which has been made at the request of another minister responsible for a related land development or land use function. But the minister, if he decides to exercise his discretion in that regard, in respect of sub-clause 3, still has to follow the processes we have just outlined in 54. Let's give you, Honourable Member, I suppose, an example. There's much talk at the moment about infrastructure development. So a minister other than the minister responsible for land may want to approach the minister responsible for land with a suggestion around infrastructure development which will impact on land use. So the minister, in terms of sub-clause 3, doesn't have to make regulations, but he could consider that if he wanted to and then make regulations. So we give him the discretion. Okay. Does that cover it for you? Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Thanks. There's a general concern in government, even in the public, that ministers like to work in silos. And when you say may, you're saying, this is my territory. If I like, I will call on somebody to cooperate with me. If I don't, it's my area, it's my discretion.
Honourable Chair, is that a statement or do you require me to respond to
it? That was our original
question.
Sure.
Okay.
So you thought that no problem. You
call
the other
problem. Absolutely. But in respect of your statement, Honourable Chair, yes, there may be a silent mentality and that those words are bandied around all the time. But what do we stress in clause 8? Is in fact this consultative process. That's why we say the minister must consult the provincial and local spheres of government. We also prescribe an extensive public participation process which has to be followed. And bear in mind that in the respect of planning such as this, it's the minister responsible for land and it's the provincial and local sphere of government that have primary responsibility for the planning. And so we are saying to any other minister, for example, in respect of infrastructure, the minister responsible for infrastructure, he could come along to the minister responsible for land and say, I'd like you to do something for me. The minister needs to consider that. He needs to go back to the other organs of that. He then has to ask the public to comment on it. And only then could he decide, well, he's going to accommodate that minister. In other words, he breaks down the silo mentality.
No doubt, yeah. Chief, we tested it.
Sure.
In Parliament.
Absolutely.
I'm sure Mr. Akonkobi will remember.
Sure.
We called the 6 portfolio committees that are affected directly by this bill. And we asked them whether they have had anything from their respective departments. They had nothing. This bill was tabled in the cabinet. It was approved in front of those ministers. And yet the departments did nothing to consider the deal in terms of how it affects them. And even the people who said to us, can you run a workshop so that we understand what you're talking about? so that we can engage the respective departments. It has not happened. So we know for a fact that it does not happen in practice. In theory, yes, but in practice it doesn't. Go ahead, Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we then turn to clause 12. And on page 30, in line 26, after the word on, we insert the word mineral resources and. Also on page 30, from line 32, we omit paragraph bracket A and substitute paragraph bracket A with the following paragraph A. The national government, a provincial government, and the municipality must participate in the spatial plan and land use management processes that impact on each other to ensure that the plans and programs are coordinated, consistent, and in harmony with each other. Now, Chairperson, that of course eliminates the silo mentality that spoke away and is consistent with Chapter 3 of the Constitution and the provisions of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework. It compels the three spheres to work together.
Beautiful, Chief. But I'm worried that Minister Nkwinti say, but you tie my hands, so I can't go forward because these other departments are not cooperating. There has to be some clause somewhere which allows them to go ahead with the structures that are cooperating. So the work of government must continue. It cannot be put to a stop simply because they may not be held with each other. Remember that at some point there is not going to be one party running the country. It may be a coalition of parties. And one party says, I don't like it. And this clause says, I must be the one at the table and agreeing with that before it can happen. And yet the public is not being serviced. I know that we are putting too many requirements, but I'm saying I like this clause that stands now. It ties the hands of all the spheres to cooperate with each other. Go ahead, Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also on page 30, from line 46, we omit paragraph A. In other words, Chairperson, the subclause reading under 5, the Municipal Spatial Development Framework must take, in accordance with Chapter 5 of the Municipal System Act, contribute to and form part of the Municipal Integrated Development Plan, and that is being deleted. Thank you. Then, Chairperson, we can turn to clause 14. Okay. Thank you. And on page 14, in line 27, after the word principles, we insert the word and norms and standards. You'll notice we've introduced this concept of norms and standards throughout the book, and for consistency, we add the word and norms and standards to 14 to for consistency. Thank you.
Chairperson, this was motivated by the comments made by the senior counsel in his opinion, where he said that setting the bar at applying generally the principles is too abstract and vague, and that would never be realized. What in turn we done in response to that was to say that the bar is now set at the specific norms and standards that the minister is going to describe. So it's not vague anymore. Yes, generally you have to comply with the principles in Chapter 2, but over and above that, the norms and standards will give you some indication as to how to go about complying with those principles.
Thank you, Chairperson. Then, Chairperson, we turn to clause 18.
I'm battling to find that issue was just dealt with. I don't have a problem with it, but it says clause 14 on page 14, in line 27. Are you pardon? Did somebody change it? It says in my document, line 27.
Page 14, line 27.
It is in fact line 27. It's clause 14, okay. And I can read it to you. It's 14. The National Spatial Development Framework must, bracket A, give effect to the development principles, and we add the and norms and standards.
That's not line 27 with respect. That's line 39.
No, it's line 27. In the original document.
The original document.
Okay.
Sure. Okay. To achieve it, but we explained that we're working from the document dealing with the amendment. That's called B40A, and we're dealing with B40. So while I'm doing this, I'm looking at B40 and B14A. Okay, thank you. Honourable Member, have you got that now? Thank you. May I
refer?
That's quite correct. Thank you. But that's only if the committee adopts it all and incorporates it. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Then we turn to clause 18, Chairperson, Honourable Members. And in clause 18 on page 15, from line 51, we delete a paragraph A and B from that subclause. In other words, the section will read, in 3, the Minister of the Consultation with the Senior and the Municipal Council responsible for geographic area, may declare any geographic area of the Republic to be a region for the purposes of this section when necessary to give effect to national land use policies or priorities in any specific geographic area of the Republic in addition to the social development framework applicable to such area. Chairperson, then we turn to clause 19. Okay. Sure. And again, Chairperson, Advocate Lars pointed out to me that was also done as a response to the comments made by Advocate Jamie. Clause 19. In clause 19, on page 16, in line 6, sorry, line 16, after the words principle, sorry, we said to it, insert and applicable norms and standards. And on page 16, in line 25, to omit the word be consistent and to substitute the word comply. And so on page 16, in line 25, we will say a regional development framework must comply with environmental legislation. Thank you. Clause 21. On page 16, in line 46, after the word principle, we insert the word and applicable norms and standards. Also on page 16, in line 48, to omit the second word for and to substitute therefore the word of. So the word for is being replaced by the word of. On page 17, in line 31, we omit the word the figure Roman letter I and substitute that with Roman letter II. In respect of clause 22 on page 17 from line 49 we omit paragraph B, so that paragraph 2 would read as follows: the municipal planning tribunal or any other authority required or mandated to make a land development decision, may depart from the provisions of the municipal spatial development framework only if site-specific circumstances justify a departure from the provisions of such municipal spatial development framework. Full stop. Thank you. Again, on page 17, in line 52, after the word must, we insert the following: in accordance with the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, in accordance, thank you, thanks. And that too, Chairperson, was in response to Advocate Jamie. In clause 23, on page 18, from line 12, we omit subclause 2,
And we substitute surplus 2 with new surplus 2, which reads as follows. Subject to the provisions of Section 81 of the Local Government Municipal Structures Act 1998, Act Number 117 of 1998, and the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, 2003, Act Number 41 of 2003, the municipality, in the performance of its duties in terms of this chapter, must allow the participation of a traditional council. Thank you. You're not perhaps a traditional leader in a different life, okay?
No.
Okay. Just asking, okay, person, just asking.
Making sure that the traditional leaders are coming with us.
Good, thank you.
Because I read a comment there of the professor James of the
state.
He says the promotion of the deputy in our country. And if you leave representatives, you are creating a France which you with unnecessary. While you are supposed to send to the people, you are creating a group of people to fight with you. Why? It's not necessary. It's the one thing that we do right now. Don't create France for fight. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The chairperson, we turn to clause 24, and on page 18, in line 21, we omit the word suitable, and we replace that with the word appropriate, rather than suitable. So that particular clause will read, a land use scheme adopted in terms of subsection bracket 1 must, bracket A, include appropriate categories of land use zoning and regulations for the entire municipal area, including areas not previously subject to a land use scheme, semicolon. Thank you. That's quite clear. Thank you. We then turn to clause 28, chapters, honourable members, on page 19 of the line 57, we add the following subclause 4. And it reads as follows, bracket 4, despite the provision of sections 35 and 41, any change to the land use scheme of a municipality affecting the scheme regulation setting out procedures and conditions relating to the use and development of land in any zone in terms of section 25, bracket 2, bracket A, may only be authorized by the municipal council. Thank you. In other words, that is, authority is given only to the municipal council. Thank you. Clause 30.
So you are able to move the responsibility of the council and say to the people to do that. Because at the end, it is the decision of the council.
Clause 30, on page 20, in line 29. We omit the word the municipal planning tribunal, and we substitute those words with the word the relevant municipality. So that too was as a result of the comments made by Advocate Jamie, which were very useful. And so we've introduced that. So that section now reads as follows. The relevant municipality may regard an authorization in terms of any other legislation that meets all the requirements set out in the Act or in provincial legislation as an authorization in terms of this Act. Thank you. We now turn to clause 31, chairperson, honourable members, and on page 20, in line 32, we omit the word for and substitute the word for with the word to. Also on page 20, in line 57, we omit the word central and we substitute that with the word publicly accessible. Okay. So instead of saying in 31 bracket 2, The written report referred to in subsection 1 must be accessible to members of the public during normal office hours at the municipality's central office. We say that the written record referred to in subsection 1 must be accessible to members of the public during normal office hours at the municipality's publicly accessible office. Thank you. We then move on to clause 32 on page 20. In 944, we omit the words "or town planning." On page 21, in line 3, after the word "may," we insert the word "subject to," subsection 8. On page 21, in line 35, after the word "thereof," we insert, open bracket, "and return it as soon as practical after achieving the purpose for which it was removed or seized." In other words, under 7, when an inspector removes or seizes an article, substance, plant, machinery, book, record, or other document as contemplated in subsection 4, bracket F, or bracket G, comma, he or she must issue a receipt to the owner or person in control thereof, and this is what we add, chairperson, and return it as soon as practical after achieving the purpose for which it was removed or seized. In other words, we place an obligation on that person to return the document seized. Can't just issue a receipt, he must return it once he's used it. Is the power of search decision. So he sees a thing, and once he or she has used it for whatever purpose it's required, it must be returned. Unless, of course, there is a legal impediment to return. Okay, thank you. It is an honourable member. And on page 21, after line 35, we've added a number of subclauses, and I will read them. The first is subclause 8, which reads as follows. An inspection of a private dwelling may only be carried out by an inspector when authorized in terms of a warrant issued by a competent court. Full stop. Bracket 9. An inspector may, comma, where necessary, comma, be accompanied by a police official or any other person reasonably required assisting him or her in conducting the inspection. Full stop. Bracket 10. An inspector may issue a compliance notice to the person who controls or manages the land for the owner or person in control of a private dwelling if a provision of this act has not been complied with. Full stop. Bracket 11. A compliance notice remains in force until the relevant provisions of the act has been complied with and the inspector has issued a compliance certificate in respect of that notice. Full stop. Bracket 12. An inspector who enters a search of any land or private dwelling under this section must conduct such search or seizure with strict regard to decency and order of comment, and with regard to each person's right to dignity, freedom, security, and privacy. Full stop. Close bracket. Full stop. There are a few grammatical errors in that clause, but we'll correct them, Chairperson, honourable members. May I return to clause 35, Chairperson, honourable members? On page 22, after line 10, we insert the following subclause, bracket 3. Bracket 3. A municipality must, comma, in order to determine land use and land development applications in its municipal area, comma, categorize development applications to be considered by an official and those to be referred to the municipal planning tribunal. In other words, Chairperson, we say we streamline, we say it's got to be divided between those that have to be considered by an official, and those that have to be referred to the municipal planning process, that tribunal. In other words, the 15 process takes place at the time. Then on page 22, do you know what the line is? It's up to 103. And substitute 2, substitute 4. Okay, on the total of 3. Okay. On page 22, in line 24, we omit the 3 in brackets, and we substitute the 3 with the number 4 in brackets. Okay. Sure. That's all. Thank you. And then again, in page 22, before the word where, we insert subject to subsection bracket 3. Chairperson, honourable members, in paragraph 2 and 3, referring to clause 35, you have question mark, and that's because we've added sub-clause 3, and we didn't know how it's going to be incorporated in the bill, so we put those question marks because we didn't know exactly what line would be affected, if you don't mind. Sure. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. You want me to read it again? My colleagues on my left and my right are suggesting, Chairperson, that I read the two clauses together, and I'll do so. Paragraph 3, bracket 3. The municipality must, in order to determine land use and land development applications within its municipal area, categorize development applications to be considered by an official and those to be referred to the municipal planning tribunal, full stop. Bracket 4. Subject to subsection bracket 3, where a municipal official is authorized in terms of subsection 2 to consider and determine land use and land development applications, comma, the provision of sections 40, bracket 4, comma, bracket 5, comma, bracket 6, comma, bracket 7, and bracket 9, comma, 41, comma, 42, 43, 44, comma, 45, comma, 46, comma, 47, 48, and 51, apply to such an official as if the reference to a municipal planning tribunal in such provisions refers to such official, full stop. Thank you. Chairperson, we then turn to 22, page 22, line 39, and we add after the first words municipal council and insert and subject to section 139 of the constitution. In other words, the section then reads as follows, bracket 3. Where municipal council fails to appoint persons referred to in section 36, bracket 1, bracket B, the premier of the province in which the municipality is situated may, comma, after consultation with the management council and subject to section 139 of constitution, comma, appoint such persons on behalf of the municipal council, comma, and, comma, where necessary, the premier must determine the terms and conditions of that person's appointment. Full stop. Thank you. We then turn, Chairperson, to clause 38. Again on page 22, in line 49, we omit the words of members and we substitute for the words of members the words from membership. So that clause will read as follows. Disqualification from membership of municipal planning tribunal is failing. Thank you. On page 23, Chairperson, in line 32, we omit the word, in the opinion of the municipal council, comment, there are good reasons, and we substitute those words with the word, there are reasonable grounds. So that Chairperson, The subclause will read as follows. Subclause 5. The Municipal Council may at any time remove any member of an applicable municipal plan tribunal from office if there are reasonable grounds justifying the removal. Thank you. Chairperson, honourable members, we now turn to clause 39. And on page 23 in line 40, after the word tribunal, we insert the word an executive authority of the municipality as the appeals tribunal. So that the section reads, the clause reads as follows. 39 bracket 1, a municipal planning tribunal, an executive authority of the municipality as the appeal authority, and the minister, acting in terms of section 52 may, in the performance of duties, appoint or employ the services of technical or other advisors, full stop. Chairperson, we now turn to clause 41. And on page 24, in line 34, after the word scheme, we insert the word accept any change affecting the scheme regulations in terms of section 25, bracket 2, bracket 8. So that the subclause reads as follows. And I'll read the whole of the subclause, 41. 41, bracket 2, an application contemplated in subsection 1 includes an application for bracket A, township establishment, semicolon, bracket B, the subdivision of land, semicolon, bracket C, the consolidation of different pieces of land, semicolon, bracket 4, the amendment of a land use or town planning scheme, except any change affecting the scheme regulations in terms of section 25(2)(a) or e, removal, amendment or suspension of a restricted condition. We now turn to clause 45, chairperson, honourable members, and we turn to page 25, and from line 31, we read number subclause 2. That becomes subclause 4, and subclause 4 becomes subclause 2. In other words, we just inverted clause 50. In clause 50, on page 27, from line 1, we omit subclause 3. We omit subclause 3 in its entirety. Subclause 3 reads as follows, where the development application is approved without the required provision of land for parks or open space, the applicant must pay a development charge to the municipality for the provision of such land, and that is deleted in its entirety. Clause 51.
Why was it deleted? Why are you omitting it?
Honourable member, that was a proposal that came from your committee itself after the committee deliberated on it. And I suppose because in any event they have to pay, the land is going to be provided by the municipality. It's self-evident, I suppose. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, the development application should be approved subject to all the conditions required.
Is that in order, honourable member? Thank you. May I then continue, Chairperson? Thank you. We now turn to clause 50, and in, we've done that, I'm so sorry, we turn to clause 51. On page 27, in line 7, we omit the word, notwithstanding the provisions of section 62 of the Municipal Systems Act. In other words, the clause will now read clause 51(1). A person whose rights are affected by a decision taken by a municipal planning tribunal may appeal against that decision by giving a written notice of the appeal and reasons to the municipal manager within 21 days of the date of notification of the decision. So far. Again, Honourable Member, that was a decision of the committee which took off the deliberation.
I accept that, but the committee might have asked for that because we did speak about the Municipal Systems Act, but to simply remove it because the committee asked for it might make this change problematic. Could somebody explain to me why it's been moved? Because the Municipal Systems Act is there, it does provide or prescribe certain things. Why is it being moved?
Chairperson, Honourable Member, can I suggest that we look at this and then I'll respond to the I'll look at it and give the Honourable Member an informed response, which may then help the committee. Sorry. Chairperson, Honourable Member, in fact, I'm so sorry, but my colleagues have pointed out to me that we, in fact, do deal with this a little later. So if we can just run through the other sections and then we'll explain that. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you, Chairperson. Then on page 27, from line 14, we omit the words, but no variation or revocation of a decision may detract from any right that I have accrued as a result of the decision. So that... on page 27, line 14, it will read as follows, bracket 3, that is subclause 51, bracket 3. The appeal authority must consider the appeal and confirm, vary or revoke the decision, full stop. Then on page 27 of the line 25, we add the following subclause, and this chairperson deals with the Honourable Member's queries. We add subclause which reads, a municipality may, in the place of its executive authority, authorize that the body or institution outside of the municipality or in the manner regulated in terms of a provincial legislation, assume the obligation of an appeal authority in terms of this section, full stop, bracket 7. No appeal in respect of a decision taken in terms of or pursuant to this Act may be lodged in terms of Section 62 of the Municipal Systems Act, full stop. Thank you. I'm not certain if that clarifies it for you, Honourable Member. We've taken it out in subclause 51.1 and we've inserted it in subclause 7. We've clarified it.
It does clarify what you've done. But can I have an explanation why you've done it? That would be beneficial for me, because you do recognize that there is a Municipal Systems Act. You say it doesn't apply in the one sense, but then it applies at the end. And I'd just like to get an idea of what has motivated you taking it out at the beginning, notwithstanding the provisions of Section 2 of the Municipal Systems Act, and then at the end saying there may no appeal may be lodged in terms of Section 62 of the Municipal Systems Act. So you're basically saying by those two amendments that the appeals will not take place according to provisions of the Municipal Systems Act.
My colleague will deal with it and then I'll come in here. Thank you.
Chairperson, the amendments were brought about to ensure that the Systems Act is not put directly against the Special Planning and Land Management Act. The way that the bill was introduced, it could lead to an interpretation that this bill trumps the Municipal Systems Act. Now, trying to avoid a situation where we get into the status of the bill, as a result of the Johannesburg Court judgment, I don't want to say selectively, but certain legislation or the implementation of certain legislation was preferred against other legislation. So we're saying here, this one is to work in conjunction with the Systems Act, and that when getting into the status of it, no one enjoys a higher status than the other. If you start out a sentence, a legislative sentence, and you say, notwithstanding that, automatically you create the impression of perception, and you certainly lay ground for an argument to be made that this Act trumps that Act. We're not saying that. We're saying that everything that pertains to the content of this Act must be dealt with in terms of this Act. You are not going to use the Systems Act to trump this one, and you're not going to use this one to trump the Systems Act. That is why the amendment was brought back to the Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And in addition to that, we're also trying to prevent double dipping. In other words, to avoid confusion, the person can't lodge an appeal in terms of both the Act and, of course, the System Act, and that avoids that possibility. Thanks. Chairperson, honourable members, we then turn to clause 52 on page 28. And after line 5 on page 28, we add another sub-clause, that is sub-clause 7, which reads as follows. Nothing in this section authorizes lodgement or referral of an application for land use or land development to the minister without such application having been first lodged, having first been lodged and considered by the relevant municipality in terms of section 33.1. Full stop.
Honourable members, you will remember, you will recall that the mineral, the mining houses do not want this. They want to deal directly with the national minister and get all their licenses and permits and ignore the municipalities. And the people who are directly affected by the whole gaping holes that are left after mining. And this corrects that.
And you
grant them no exemption. Thank you.
In fact, it strengthens the hands of municipalities, Chairperson. We now turn, Chairperson, honourable members, to clause 54. I dealt with that already. Do you want me to read again this full convenience? In fact, I'll read. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we now turn to clause 56, which deals with delegation. And on page 29, in line 11, we omit or delete the whole of clause 56 and substitute clause 56 with the following. Clause 56, in power, comma, except the power to make regulations and the power to determine land use and land development applications as contemplated in section 35, comma, conferring this act upon a minister, comma, a premier or municipality, comma, may, comma, in general or in cases of a particular nature, comma, be delegated by the personal body entrusted with that power to a political officeholder or an official in the employ or serves of the relevant sphere of government, colon, provided that any such delegation must be in writing and must specify full particulars and the limitations of such a delegation. Thank you. We now turn to clause 58, the penalties and offences clause. And one, on page 29, in line 23, we omit the figures 25 bracket 1 and the word or and the figure bracket 2. And we substitute for that omission 38 bracket 3. On page 29, in line 24, after the word use, we insert as contemplated in section 26 bracket 2. So that the section reads, the clause reads as follows. A person is guilty of an offence if that person uses land contrary to a permitted land use as contemplated in section 26, bracket 2. And Chairperson, on page 29, in line 27, we delete the whole of paragraph, subparagraph D, with subclause rather D, and substitute that with the following D. That would be 58, bracket 1, bracket D. And that would be a person is guilty of an offence if that person, bracket D, hinders or obstructs any inspector in the performance of any function in terms of this act, comma. We now turn, Chairperson, to the transitional provisions contained in clause 60. On page 29, from line 50, we omit the whole of subclause 2 and we substitute that with the following new subclause 2. Paragraph 2 bracket A, all applications, comma, the fees or other matters pending before a tribunal established in terms of Section 15 of the Development Facilitation Act 1995, in brackets, Act Number 67 of 1995, closed bracket, at the commencement of this Act, that have not been decided or otherwise disposed of, comma, must be continued and disposed of in terms of this Act, full stop, bracket B. A reference to a tribunal in terms of Section 15 of the Development Facilitation Act 1995, in bracket, Act Number 67 of 1995, closed bracket, must for the purposes of deciding or otherwise disposing of any application, comma, appeal or other matters pending before a tribunal at the commencement of this Act, must be construed as a reference to a local or metropolitan municipality, full stop, bracket C. References to a designated officer and the registrar in terms of the Development Facilitation Act, comma, 1995, in brackets, Act Number 67 of 1995, close bracket, must for purposes of deciding or otherwise disposing of any application, comma, appeal or other matters pending before the tribunal at the commencement of this Act, must be construed as reference to an official of a local or metropolitan municipality designated by such municipality to perform such functions, full stop. D. The minister may prescribe a date on which such applications, comma, appeals or other matters must be disposed of, comma, and may prescribe arrangements in respect of such matters not disposed of by that date, full stop. That then replaces, Chairperson, Honourable Members, the whole of subclause 2. I now turn, Chairperson, Honourable Members, to Schedule 1, and we've made one change in Schedule 1. That on page 31, in line 40, we delete the word re-enact. In other words, that particular subclause will read as follows. Provincial legislation regulating land development, comma, land use management, comma, township establishment, comma, spatial planning, comma, subdivision of land, comma, consolidation of land, comma, the removal of restriction and other matters related to provincial planning and municipal planning may, bracket D, repeal, comma, or amend provincial legislation, comma, including ordinances, bracket 1, which is inconsistent with this Act, bracket 2, that apply to land development, comma, land use management, comma, township establishment, spatial planning, comma, subdivision of land, comma, consolidation of land, or the removal of restrictions, semicolon, and bracket 3, that deals with other matters related to municipal and provincial planning in the province, semicolon. Chairperson, and then in Schedule 3, on page 35 of the line 6, we insert the following. And this schedule deals with the repeal of law, so we're adding another view. The first block would read Act Number 113 of 1991. In the second block, we add the title, and the title, Less Formal Township Establishment Act. And the extent of the repeal is in the third block, and we're repealing the whole of Act Number 113 of 1991. That then, Chairperson, Honourable Members, brings me to the end of our presentation. Thank you.
Honourable Members, if you have any further questions, now will be time for us to get those questions. If there are no questions, we will then have to consider the bill as amended. They've done what we asked them to. Mr. Gondron.
Sorry, father.
So, do you help this person? Can we turn to page 8 of it? In clause 56, there is a question who might be delegated by the minister in clause 56, ne? Yeah. So is it not proper? Okay, this subclause D. You know, it's in the city, I'm not okay, in the book, so I didn't put them in the book. Okay. Just a minute. Okay, I'm not sure now, you know, I read it and then I found it that you have not covered this person now deleted. By the minister in clause 56. It's not proper to cover him as well.
Does it not cover that person by saying that it refers to this act? And the act speaks to a delegated person by the minister, so it does cover that person.
Honourable Member, was your question with reference to the proposed change that we've made in respect of the inspectors? You see, the change we've made relates to clause 58.1d, and 58.1d before the change reads as follows: a person is guilty of an offence if that person, bracket d, obstructs, hinders, or threatens any person in the performance of duty or the exercise of the power in terms of this act. And we've changed it by deleting the word person and replacing that with the word inspector. And inspector is in fact defined under the definition section as meaning the person designated or appointed as an inspector under section 32. So that's all. Thank you very much.
Also, Chairperson, in clause 32, we provide specific conditions under which inspectors are appointed. So, yes, the municipality can appoint any person as an inspector, but in doing so, that person is going to get a certificate indicating that he is in fact an inspector, and that can't be sub-delegated. So that delegation really doesn't cater to further delegation or arbitrary delegation of that power to an inspector. Thank you.
Honourable members, we have agreed with them that they've done what we wanted them to do. The onus is on us to consider all the amendments, read together with the opinions, the two opinions, the opinion that the department presented to us on that opinion of Advocate James. So if we consider the three documents together on the 29th of January, we meet again like this, and we consider whether we should adopt this bill as amended. And once we have done that, we then agree on the report that must be tabled together with the bill and presented to that. Are we agreed? So there is no obligation to adopt it now. We remember we are consistent on this thing, that we have to be seen to apply our mind on everything that we agree to. So that is what we will do. Thank you very much. We thank you very much for the good work. Well done. And we will come back to you and say something missing or you have gone overboard. We will call you back here. But for now, we don't know. We have to consider the documents in front of us. Yes. Honourable members, can yes.
Just for us to crystallize, I mean, it's very difficult to pass this, and I think your advice is good, because we now need to read the new document. But could the department just tell us in what way these new proposals address the generic or holistic issues that were raised by Africa Chang? For example, how does it address the traditional leadership issue about taking matters to the heart of the leader? How does it deal with the fact that there appears to be an infringement from one state of government onto the other? It's just a holistic idea of how this enriches it and makes it. They will probably ensure that this proposed amendment will pass constitutional muster.
Chairperson, honourable members, I did seek your guidance at the beginning of this meeting. We have prepared for you, Chairperson, at your request, a response to Advocate Jamie's opinion. And insofar as Advocate Jamie raises certain issues, we've looked at those issues and we've proposed changes which addresses the issues we need to raise. But to do that, Chairperson, honourable member, we really need to run through the document we've prepared for you, because that then conceptualizes all the changes we've made or proposed.
We assume that was the document that was presented by honourable Okonogu. Is that the document? Why do you want to rerun that document? Because the only member is not asking for that. He's saying, in what way is the final version of the bill as amended completely addresses those issues? Remember you asked the MM that the end result must look like the fact that it addressed all the concerns, both of the committee and the senior council. So if both of you, if both of our concerns are covered in the new, the honourable member says how. His concern was that you were vague, a broad general, you were prescriptive, remember? Now you have corrected those, I'm assuming, in the new version you've given us. In what way have you done that? Just generally. You can say, in this clause, for instance, he was choosing, for instance, he was saying the whole of chapter 2, chapter 4, and chapter 6, where the weaknesses of the bill were. They were general, they were vague, they were prescriptive. Now, and irrational. In what way now have you addressed that? We've had the clauses you have amended. In what way then have you addressed that vagueness? You did allude to one of them.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you recall from our previous explanation or response to that legal opinion that we didn't share Advocate Jamie's view on broadly the constitutionality of the bill in its entirety. We didn't agree that 246 was unconstitutional. What we did undertake to do at the time, Chairperson, was to consider the perspective that he was coming from and to ensure that as far as possible we try to remove a basis for an allegation that it is overbroad. Where he had said firstly that this was in fact not framework legislation, he didn't give us any indication that framework legislation starts and ends at this particular point. It was a general statement that it wasn't framework legislation, but he didn't say specifically clause 2 must be amended to read and continue the provision. What he did then was we tried to remove that uncertainty or that basis, and we, in trying to do so, in trying to bring about that, we had ensured that we brought in the very real reality of intergovernmental framework, as well as the chapter on cooperative governance. Now, where we had inserted those words, where we make specific reference to the IGR Act, where we make specific reference to the different spheres of government, where we make specific reference to consultation with those organs of state that may have an impact or that may be affected by this book, we have done so to bolster it and to remove that possible allegation. That's the first thing. As to the traditional dealers, we had kept the bill as introduced. We had, in our view, thought that there was sufficient reference to traditional leaders, traditional leadership, and we had tried to bolster the role of municipalities and the municipal council, it as the executive and the legislative authority in a municipality, and we tried to bolster it with their interaction with traditional leaders, and we expressly provided that in certain instances you must, like you had said, take them along, consult with them. Those were the things that generally we had done to address the senior council's legal opinion, and it is found, it finds its expression in clause 2, clause 7, clause 8, 14, 19, 22, 30, 32, 35, 56, and 58. Specifically, you will, when those clauses are reconsidered by you when looking at the people, you will see, like I said, reference to organs of state and the provincial and local spheres of government. You will find that reference is specifically made to exact and tangible norms and standards and no longer just the general development principles contained in the bill. You will find reference to the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. In one instance, and this is specifically in clause 30, sub clause 3, we had provided for the Municipal Planning Tribunal to take care of certain functions, and now we've replaced that with the relevant municipality. So no longer a tribunal made up of members of all spheres of government that don't take decisions. Rather, that decision will be located completely in the local sphere of government, and a municipality specifically will take that decision. As to the illegality of certain seizure that was raised by the advocate, we have inserted quite a number of sub-clauses that talk to the inspectors what they are allowed to do and what they are no longer allowed to do. You will find that they now do a search and seizure only when warrant is in hand. When your goods and items are searched and seized, you don't forfeit them permanently and completely. It will be returned to you. The inspector is allowed now to take along a police official, a member of the SAC, to ensure that when he detects this warrant, he does so lawfully and in accordance with not just the warrant, but generally the Criminal Procedure Act. And it's expressly referred to the recipient of that warrant or that search and that seizure, that person's dignity and freedom and security and privacy, those rights are important, must be emphasized, and certainly must be respected. Those are the things, and these are the clauses that we had amended in response to the advocate's opinion. But it must also be noted that not everything were accepted and not everything could find expression in the text. Where we disagreed with the opinion and we found that, you know, we couldn't make amendments that would both satisfy the senior counsel and ourselves in the department, we chose to not make amendments. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I feel you got that sort of omnibus response, because what we experienced before today was an element of defensiveness from the sponsor of the legislation. Now, this committee is not the sponsor of the legislation. This committee is going to consider the legislative proposal. We then sought advice, and the advice was given, and there was that defensiveness. But it does appear that the advice or the opinion has enriched the document, and we will go and look at the enriched document, and I hope present it to Councillor Jenny, senior counsel, for him to have a look at it, because it would be a good idea to see whether some of those issues or all of those issues are addressed. And to me, Chair, I'd like to say that we as a committee, or I certainly appreciate the fact that we did do this, because this bill was only caught by its tail feathers. It was already scheduled to be discussed and passed in the NCOP. Then it came back here, and subsequently we've had comprehensive public hearings, submissions, discussions to enrich the document. So sometimes it's not enough for a piece of legislation to be conceived in a department and then burst in Parliament without proper interaction and enrichment. And today I'm sure many of these new additions and omissions have made the bill better, and I look forward to reading it and discussing it with my colleagues at the different spheres of government to see whether their concerns are addressed, because it's not just us, it's our colleagues at provincial and local level who also have reservations about some of the discussions in the state.
Thank you very much,
Father.
Sungila only the board is here. All right. Thank you again. We appreciate what you have done. And I'll just have Pangela. The concern that we continue to have, maybe we should address the department. The concern that we continue to have is the fact that as a portfolio committee, by extension the department, have not considered this bill and its impact on what they will have to do during this process. And sometimes when that happens, the ministers would want to consult lawyers every time they have to deal with anything affecting them in this field. He may be prudent, because we've done our bit and the portfolio committees in Parliament don't seem to work with us. We try. It may be prudent for the department to do its bit and consult its own colleagues that are affected directly by the bill. I'm not suggesting that you ask permission from them, but draw their attention to those aspects of the bill that affect them. Because after 29th of January, if we are satisfied that the changes are suitable and appropriate, we will then table it in the House and this gets passed as an act. We do not want the bill to go and jump in NCOP because there are certain people who suddenly wake up like they eat all these years from 2007 up now, nobody cares. And later, 2012, they say, oh, we didn't realize. We were not sure that you were going to go through with the ETOL. So we don't want nobody to do that. I know that the departments of government don't take each other to court, but fears do. Yeah. So it may be important that you do that, to help us, to help you, to do the job properly. Thank you very much. At this point, the department may want to hear the minutes that we're adopting relating to the work that we did with you, but the state law advisors may be excused if you're not interested in our minutes. The department has got a vested interest in hearing how we record our interaction with them. Yes, sir. Thank you very much. This said in front of me, honorable members, this is the set of minutes of the 14th of November. I'm assuming that members got the minutes the same time as me, and therefore they have read them. Who called him? Yeah? Yes, ma'am?
Chair, can we participate in the operation of the minutes?
Oh, these are our minutes. But you can raise questions. But don't say correct them. We will correct them if we can see. But you can raise the questions.
Go ahead. Any other statement?
Ms. P. Guza is not a chicken panner. She is the director for M&E in the department. Guza.
That is helpful. Honourable members, is there any person in among us who does not want us to adopt the minutes? On page 1, is there a problem? No. No?
No.
Okay, on page 2? No problem?
No problem.
On page 3? And the last page. Thank you very much. Does any member want to move? Ms. Carver? Ms. Carver is moving for the adoption. Fagu, JJ agrees. Thank you very much. The minutes have been adopted. Honourable members, we had only 2 items in the agenda today. Before we release you, Conrubi, I don't know whether you recognize Christmas, but to give you a Christmas present, do you have any questions?
Okay, to thank the committee for asking us to enrich the bill.
To the question. So you did not accept by Christmas present. All right. Mr. Carmel.
Thank you very much, sir, for the whole process. I think it gave everybody a chance to express themselves from the private public hearing, and also when we went through the bill across the floor, up to your appointment as a senior counselor, and the chance of the conduct of the public, and the assistance of the people around. So thank you very much. I thank you for the prayer and the conference.
You know, you have written many reports and so on. You know the reason why when authors of books give their books to others to profit, it's precisely because this is the point that Fag was making him. When you wrote the bill, you were happy that you wrote a good bill that covered all the issues that we managed to cover. So when he was slaughtered by senior counsel, you felt unjustly accused of writing a flop deal. Now that you have re-looked at it, because I know I was sitting there with you, with the minister who said, I accept the staff's views on what they produced, their own product. But I also accept that Honorable Jamie, sorry, the Council of Jamie, has pointed out certain things from his own point of view. Go back and consider them and come back with a reviewed piece of legislation. And now that we have this product, let's go back and look at it again and see whether on the 29th of January we should not adopt it in the manner which has been created. Honorable Logan Roby.
Chair, whatever what the information is, as a department we've been instructed in our standard to have a look at it for 2 years. We've been instructed as okay, the counselors and our juniors and so forth to look at that exercise. We surely should have some opinion by the end of this month. I'll be calling on this month. So, is it, well, I mean, for our own goodness, and I do not believe that Jeremy Gantle is my friend or somebody who will speak for me. So, but we're pretty sure that we will have. It's one with junior, computer juniors and so forth. We'll submit every work, including Jimmy's opinion.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. No. See, what you've done is a good thing. At the end, all these views coming back to this committee can put us at a league near to the Portfolio Committee of Justice, which has the best resources in the country.
Okay, just in that regard, very pleased that the department has done that. Because we discussed something 2 meetings ago where we said, incurring some senior counsel costs up front is money well spent, rather than having the department dragged into litigation every single time there's a planning issue. So I think it's money well spent up front on scarce resources, but when we can table a bill that's in Parliament, to Parliament, for their passing, that will pass constitutional muster, and that is much better than the original document. It's got to be commended. It might be painful, but it's got to be committed.
Thank you, Francis. Yes, you now are also as well asking other peers to look at your book and see whether it meets the quality. Remember when books are recommended for this prize or that prize, it's because it has met the required standard and status of good author. So you may be at the end adjudged as a good author. Thank you very much. It will also stand us in stead, Chief, when you bring the other 14 pieces of legislation. The Parliament will be looked upon as a place which makes good pieces of legislation. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Sorry, before we do that, Upumla wants to say something.
Thank you, Chair. That your geomatic professions bill has been tabled in Parliament, so by next year we'll be dealing with that. And I've got a few present dates for members to their rights for next year for the first term. We've got the 29th, the 7th and the 29th of January we'll be dealing with first deliberations on the bill. And if we agreed to adopt the report will be ready as well for adoption of this bill. And then on the same day we'll have a briefing on the geomatics if it has been referred officially to the committee that is tabled.
You gave us a program that which had dates that were
monitoring and evaluation. So we decided to look at the dates before we can even get the EDP from the department, so that the committee is able to gauge the performance of the department based on the report that will be tabled by MNE. Yes. And then it's the MNE is the Public Service Commission. It's then it's the Department of Rural Development on its own performance on the evaluation mechanism. Yes. It's only for the first term. And then after Easter, we'll then use the program that we agreed during the second that we'll deal with that. After the APC has been tabled, then we're free to do our own program. But for now, we're tied with the parliamentary one. Thank you.
Yeah, because I need to be present 3 days and try to go to Hong Kong. You must look at this case, this is my work test and then Hong Kong.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned until the 29th of January. Thank you very much. May you have a very, very glorious Christmas. And I'm really not discriminating against those people who do not recognize Christmas, but you still have a holiday. Thank you very much. Papago, we were ready for lunch. So we Aman Pumla man. Jesus, I Pumla. Aman Aman. Ah Pumla man. More Sama. Who is speaking to this miss God of drinking like I Pumla? Little figure, I suppose.